Love Talk Radio.
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you...
A squeaking door.
No worries, you're in the right place. Yes, I bring you a squeaking door.
I bring you
Good evening.
A squeaking
Welcome
door.
Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here with...
The returning voice of Gar the Ghoul.
Just the voice?
Uh-huh. That's
you,
it.
We need you in body and spirit, or at least spirit.
Well, you pay extra for that, buddy.
Ah.
Or at least some spirits in you, one or the other. Yeah,
yeah, there you go. Yeah,
a
send me some spirits, we'll talk.
A wonderful quote from Mr. Fogsbane himself, who just joined us in the chat. Time is the essence. Time is the season. Time ain't got no reason. Got no time to slow. That's Blue Oyster Cult, if I'm not mistaken. Don't fear the Reaper, if I'm not incorrect.
I actually worked a concert with them, the Blue Oyster Cult. In,
really?
Yeah. I was a concessionaire at a concert. And Blue Oyster Cult was there. So were who else was there? The Rolling Stones were there. I was like, what's going on?
I got to go to a Black and Blue, Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, it was post Ozzy. So it was guy's name? I don't know. He had like a southern name with three names.
They got
Pee
Wee Herman up there in place of Ozzy. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was still a good show. The music, I mean, the musicians were still good in Black Sabbath, and of course, Blue Oyster Cult rocked. That was at the Cleveland Coliseum, Dave.
The Cleveland Coliseum in Richfield, that one?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
buy a Pee Wee Herman cover album of him singing Black Sabbath songs?
Yes, I would buy that.
I would buy that. I would.
That's good Dr. Demento fodder right there.
That's some good
Herman
stuff right there.
He
did tequila, right? No, yeah. He didn't. I don't think he did.
When going off the rails on a crazy train.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, he was, that was a weird shtick. And what was it in the 80s? They had Pee Wee Herman dolls or something.
Yeah.
String.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was that incident. But let's move on as we are burning it up tonight with stories about fire.
Yep. Some good old arson tales tonight.
Mm-hmm. And that just burns me up.
Yeah. Like we didn't need fire with some of the snowstorms that have been occurring in the last week. This is rather apropos.
Now, Dave, did you get a lot of snow? You're east of me, so it's possible you got more. We got a dusting. That was it.
I got a dusting here, because Lake County is really kind of east of Cleveland yet. And although I'm southeast of you, I'm not really east of Cleveland. Lake County and the other one, Ashtabula, really, that's like a Buffalo snowbelt type place.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
They get pelted.
And surprise, 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 I got none.
What a shock. What a shock.
Yeah, what a shocker that was. Blah, blah, hey. Breaking news.
First time I went to Florida, we were asleep. My dad was driving. We were waking up, and there was all this white around. My dad said, look, we came all this way to get all this. It was white sand. My dad was pulling my leg, of which I was swallowing it, hook, line, and sinker.
I think 20 years ago there was snow in Disney, at Disney World. There was snow. There was snow. I mean,
2 inches.
Like, you know,
Fogsbane's area got
like
2 inches of snow.
Quarter of an inch. You could see it on the cars, you know. Like,
not only do we have three great fire tales, but two great horror stars.
We do.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, Carlock, the Mystery Playhouse, and Lugosi in a crime that...
It does
plus, we got
pay.
A Johnny Dollar for you tonight.
Yeah, all kinds of... Yep. Look.
If crime didn't pay, did they pay Lugosi?
Well,
it doesn't pay that, but
crime
the benefits
doesn't pay.
Are great.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The retirement is great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three hots and a cod for the rest of your life.
Three hots and a cod, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
No,
I'll pay for
no, they burned him. Burn, baby, burn.
Well, that's how he got the three hots and a cod.
Yeah, burn, baby, burn.
Yeah.
I never understood that. Why? It's like if they shoot you, you know, back in the day. They shoot you, bang, oh. And it's like, oh, don't worry, it's just a flesh wound. We'll treat it and take care of it so we can go electrocute you or gas you or something. You know, it's like, what? It's kind of like the alcohol swab they give prisoners and then, you know, they lethal injection them.
Yeah.
Why? Why?
Yeah, afraid they're going to get an infection there. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. It makes no sense.
I think it makes the needle hurt more.
Pick a needle off the sidewalk over downtown, but
oh yeah,
do that.
Yeah,
you
really.
Go.
I mean, what the
you're
heck?
Done. Good night.
You know.
Save the state some money. There we go.
Save some needles. Yeah, exactly. You know, we don't need to buy no needles. Just go down to the junkie neighborhood and all over the
there
place.
You go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get
recycling,
high and
baby.
Fried
recycling.
High and fried at the same time.
Yeah,
there you go, and that would be humane.
There you go. I get, blah, 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 blah.
We covered all the bases there. This politically, correct statement is merely a joke.
Yeah, you can tell CW's not on this show.
Yeah. Where is CW? Where is she?
Why are you picking on our buddy?
No,
I'm not picking on.
Get her in
I'm
here.
I'm not picking on. I'm just saying she wouldn't let us get away with that. That's all.
Oh, true.
Oh,
she
talking about
she
would
alcohol
be shaming. She would be shaming us because we have
deservedly.
No shame.
Deservedly.
Yes.
Yeah. If we don't have any shame, I don't think you can go anywhere with that. I'm sorry.
I don't think it would make
no.
a difference. No.
What is? I can't think of the word, but
I'll take
innocuous.
The blame.
Innocuous? No, that's not it.
I'll take the blame for whatever goes wrong. So,
okay.
Let us move forward.
Already.
Got a ton of radio, I'm sure.
Sure do. Which one are you going to start with? Blah, blah.
When that Mystery Playhouse, I got a hankering for some Karloff.
Okay.
Ah. Well, that's a good place to catch it tonight, because that's indeed where he is.
That's right. In a story called The Night Reveals.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Did you have any background in the Mystery Playhouse?
Oh, Mystery Playhouse at least started off as basically the Armed Forces Service just basically ripping off other programs and putting their own opening on it. Upon occasion, they would play, you know, Peter Lorre, when they first started, was the host, and occasionally would take small roles in some of the stories. But this one was with Karloff, so... and this was a little later in the run as well.
With a broadcast
we have an air date
of?
December the 14th, 1949.
I agree.
And...
Mystery Playhouse, starring Boris Karloff. The American Broadcasting Company presents another program in its dramatic series in which you hear Boris Karloff transcribed each week in the leading role. Mystery Playhouse is, in a sense, a radio anthology of strange, exciting, and bizarre tales. Tales of a kind the world has enjoyed since time began. Tonight, Boris Karloff will tell us a story of a man and wife who suspect each other of being a criminal. It is called The Night Reveals, and Boris Karloff will play the role of Harry Jordan.
There was something about my wife that distressed me. I don't know exactly what it was. The way she looked at me, the way she didn't look at me. But there was something on her mind. But let me tell it to you from the very beginning. About 2 weeks ago, I came home quite late, about 1 a.m. You see, I'm an investigator for the Herkimer Fire Insurance Company, and it often keeps me very busy. My wife, Marie, and my son, Johnny, were both fast asleep. I undressed and went right to bed, and dozed off almost at once. And then I was suddenly sitting upright in bed with a strange feeling. I looked over at my wife's bed. It was empty. I went into Johnny's room. She wasn't there. And she wasn't in the house at all. I looked at my watch. It was 1:30, just half an hour since I came home. I dressed quickly and went out and rang the elevator bell. Steve, the night man, was a long time in coming up. I stood there, nervous and worried, not knowing what was going on.
Sorry to be so long, Mr. Jordan.
That's all right, Steve. Afraid my family's keeping you rather busy.
Yes, sir.
How long ago did my wife go down?
About 20 minutes, sir.
Well, just getting a little worried. She went to the drugstore.
Well, the only one open now is the one on 96th Street. I guess that's what's keeping Mrs. Jordan. It's a long walk. Anything wrong, Mr.
Oh,
Jordan?
Oh, no, nothing. She just went to get some aspirin. Of course, that's what it was. She had gone to the drugstore. I was just making a fool of myself. I walked slowly toward 96th Street, and when I reached the corner, I looked down the avenue, but there was no one in sight. I turned and began to walk slowly back to the house when I heard footsteps behind me. I turned around. It was Marie. She was as surprised as I was.
Oh, Harry.
I was getting worried about you when I saw you weren't in bed.
Well, I walk with a dreadful headache. There wasn't any aspirin, so I went to the drugstore.
But I just bought a large bottle only a couple of days ago.
You did? I didn't know. Anyway, you shouldn't worry about me, dear. I was only gone about 5 minutes.
Five?
That's all it took me.
You were coming from 101st Street. There's no drugstore there.
Oh, you're wrong, dear. I came from the other direction.
Oh, I guess I was mistaken. Where's the aspirin you just bought?
Why, in my bag. Come on, Harry. Let's go back home.
We went home. Went right to bed. But I couldn't sleep. And I knew she wasn't sleeping either. I wanted to talk to her, but I didn't know what to say. Where to begin?
Harry.
Yes?
Why aren't you asleep?
Oh, I don't know. Just not sleepy. I don't seem to be able to
Harry,
drop off.
There's a fire somewhere. Don't you hear the engines?
Why, they're going north. That's around my district, 115th Street.
Yes. Well, let's see if we can try and get some sleep. Good night, dear.
Good night. As soon as I got to my desk the following morning, Mr. Parmenter, the head of my department, sent word for me to come into his office. I put my hat away and went at once.
Oh, hello, Jordan. Close the door and come in, please.
Yes, sir.
Jordan, we had a bad fire in one of our buildings about 1:30 this morning.
Oh, in my district?
Yes, the one on 115th Street.
The tenement house?
Yes.
Anyone hurt?
Fortunately, no. If it weren't for the new fire escapes put in last month, this would have been one of the worst tragedies in the city.
You know how it started?
Well, I was there last night. I think it started in the hallway. I'm not sure.
Arson?
Well, I don't know. I'd like you to take a look. The building was heavily insured. Our company is in deep.
I'm ready to go right now, Mr. Barbara.
Good. You'll get your hat and we'll leave at once.
Stood before the building and looked at the charred form of the tenement. It was hard to believe that it was still standing. It seemed as if one good wind would bring the entire structure crashing down.
She is. A Lulu, isn't she?
Yes. The fire drift marks show that the flames worked themselves up from the ground floor. Stairways acted like a bellows. I would say that in less than 15 minutes, the whole building was aflame from cellar to roof.
That sure was.
I know how these things can burn. Must have been a sheet of fire. Must have been something to look at.
I don't remember seeing a building burn so fast.
I'll go inside and see what I can find.
No, maybe you'd better not. Fire department has it all roped off. It's too dangerous.
Oh, that's my job. Maybe I can discover something.
Now, look here, Jordan. It's not part of your job to get yourself killed.
Oh, I can take care of myself. I'll be back in a few minutes. I held my breath. My heart hammered away at my ribs as I walked carefully into what was once a hallway. The ashes and charred wood underfoot was too warm. I touched nothing, for the hallway walls could collapse at a touch. It was hard to believe that this black hole in which I stood was once a hallway where people came and went. I reached the spot where the stairway once had been. Just a blackened metal railing came down from where the first floor had been. There'd been baby carriages here. Fire had contorted the frames so that they were just masses of fused metal.
Jordan! Jordan!
I'm all right, Mr. Parmenter.
Don't be a fool, Jordan.
I'll be out in a minute. Poked around with my foot in the ashes and charred wood, but found nothing. And as I turned to go, something caught my eye. It was yellow and had a bright gleam. A piece of yellow metal had fused with a piece of twisted metal bar that had once been part of a baby carriage. Pried it loose with my penknife, put it in my pocket, and then went back.
She's burnt hollow, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a complete loss. This building will just have to be torn down.
Learn anything?
Started in the hallway under the stairs. I found a piece of yellow metal that doesn't belong on the frame of a baby carriage.
Oh? Let's see it. Oh, I don't think it's anything. It's part of the baby carriage.
Guess I'll take it home to my kid. He likes shiny, bright things.
Any possibility of arson?
I don't know. Of course, it's always possible. On my way home, I fingered the yellow, shiny piece of metal. Ran my fingernail across it, and it left a mark. So it wasn't steel. I knew what it was. Gold. But I also knew that there are no gold gadgets on baby carriages.
Harry! Is anything the matter?
No, why do you ask?
Oh, your clothes, they're all full of ashes.
Well, I got myself filthy looking over that building on 115th Street. Hello, Johnny. How is my boy today?
Mommy bought me a new boat. Did you buy me candy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll get some for you later.
You said you would.
I've got some candy for you, Johnny.
I want Daddy to bring me some.
Oh, Marie.
Yes, dear?
Where's your locket? You're not wearing it.
No. No, Mr. Elias, the jeweler, has it. He's fixing it. As a matter of fact, you brought it to him, dear.
I don't remember.
Oh, you never do. You're really terribly absent-minded, Harry.
Daddy, can you bring me the nugget candy you brought me yesterday?
Sure, I can. I'll bring it tomorrow when I come home from work. You know, it's funny, Marie. I really can't remember anything about the locket or going to the jeweler's.
Well, then, if you didn't take it down to old Mr. Elias, it must still be in your suit.
Which suit?
I don't know what suit. Why don't you look through all your clothes?
I'll do that right now. It was 18 karat gold and cost me a lot of money.
Yes, I know, Harry. I'd be miserable if you lost it. Oh, I have a splitting headache.
Maybe you'd better see a doctor.
No. No, dear, I'll be all right.
Daddy, can I have a penny? 2 pennies?
Here's a nickel, Johnny.
No, I want a penny.
I haven't got a penny. You'll have to take the nickel. I'm going to my room, Marie, and see if I can find that locket. Went to my room and locked the door. Then I took out the piece of yellow metal, studied it. It might have been round before the fire had distorted it. I examined it closely under the knife. It seemed to have a seam of sorts. Took out the penknife, tried to insert it at the seam, but it wouldn't give. Then I forced the blade into a small crack. I tried to force it open, but it wouldn't give. I kept trying and trying, and suddenly it gave and came apart. The inside of it was filled with tiny particles of shattered glass, and then I saw that it contained a scorched photograph. It was a picture of my son. This glob of yellow metal was my wife's locket.
Before I go to sleep.
I just told you a story. Now go to bed, son.
No. Stay with me just a little while.
Now, Johnny, you know our rule. I'll give you just one hug and that's all.
No, two hugs.
All right. Now, good night. Sleep well.
You too, Daddy.
Harry.
Oh, Marie, you startled me.
I thought I heard Johnny cry.
Just put him to bed. Go into the living room. I'd like to talk to you. When we got into the living room, I took out my pipe and lit it. Although I didn't look at her, I knew that she was watching me closely. And when I suddenly turned round and faced her squarely, I saw the anguish in her darting, bird-like eyes. If there's something troubling you, Marie, I wish you'd tell me.
There's nothing troubling me.
If you're not feeling well, maybe you should see a doctor.
No, dear, I'm feeling fine. Just one of those headaches. It's going away. Harry, I read about the fire on 115th Street in this afternoon's paper. Well, was it as bad as they said?
Completely burned out, except for the brick walls. Burned like dry newspapers. It's one of those buildings in which the stairway's in the middle of the house, and if the fire is started right at the bottom of the stairs, it becomes a natural bellows. Whoever started that fire understood the character of fires pretty well. She watched me with eyes now still, bright and tense. She listened to me, but her whole body leaned towards me as I spoke of the fire, her fingers stiff and still upon the table. Marie, there's another building just like that, just round the corner. The red brick building with the turreted roof. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes. It's an old one. It's got the name Compton engraved near the roof.
That's right, the Compton building. If a fire ever got started there, it wouldn't take more than 10 minutes before the whole place would be a roaring furnace. Oh, my pipe's gone out. Hand me the lighter, Marie.
I'll light it for you, dear.
Thanks. I'd rather light it myself.
Oh, let me.
No fluid in it. Oh. What's happened to the matches in this drawer? I always keep it filled.
I have a match.
Did you take the matches out of the drawer?
I needed them for the gas ring.
All of them? There was a whole carton of matches.
I just took the carton.
Give me the rest of the matches. Here, let me... No, I'll light it myself.
Ooh, chilling. You know what? I can listen to that guy's voice all night long. Boris Karloff.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You guys ever have an argument about matches? I haven't.
No.
I
don't... But I once dropped a box and glanced at them on the floor, and I knew how many there were.
Uh-huh.
That definitely. 497.
You're a vampire.
Definitely.
Worst thing about
a
box of matches.
Yeah.
Worst thing about a box of matches is when you open it up and you've got it upside down.
That too.
Yeah.
It should have like an indica or little piece of something that, you know, it says this end
this
up.
Way up. Yeah, this side up. Yeah.
Another fun thing is when you're married and you come home from working at the nightclub and you had just picked up a pack of matches off of a table somewhere. Mm-hmm. And when you get home and your wife borrows the matchbook and there's some girl's name in it. Yeah, that's fun.
Boy, that would be fun.
Sorry, honey. Those weren't my matches.
I don't know. A likely story. Why you?
Well, I never had that happen either.
How was the couch that night, Dale?
Lumpy.
Yeah.
Lumpy.
Dumpy, like Leave It to Beaver. One of the kids' name was Lumpy. Yeah.
Lumpy, like anyway. A guy who's about to be 62 years old next week.
That guy. That Lumpy.
That guy. That Lumpy old.
Wow.
That Lumpy old guy.
Geezer. Why we oughta.
Well, yeah.
Time to use that ARP card.
I have an ARP card.
I like the way this story is developing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute mistrust between husband and wife.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about. I never had that problem either.
And under, like, Gars, what he says so much, the music on here is just absolutely marvelous.
Marvelous, yes.
Just to keep this mood that it is.
Especially for an earlier show, late 40s.
Yeah, and especially an Armed Forces radio show that they stole records.
From ABC, yeah, from ABC, yeah.
I thought that's called, I thought we call that reimagining now. It's in a reimagined
version. Well, everybody gets a trophy. Yeah. They can reimagine. Why not?
There you go. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody wins because we're going to wrap up Mystery Playhouse.
Here we go.
The night reveals. We'll be back.
The matchbook was crumpled as if it had been held tightly. I had to strike the match on the cover several times before it took flame with a tiny explosive sound. Sputtered and hissed a little as it slowly crawled down the matchstick. The cone-shaped flame, bright yellow on top and blue at the base, grew larger as it fed on the matchstick. Marie stared at the flame. She stared at it with her mouth slightly open, staring at it as if it were alive and beautiful. I held the flame to my pipe. The living flame darted into the bowl, enkindling the tobacco. Marie watched. A quiver went through her. I put the match in the tray and soon it curled up and died in a last tiny puff of smoke.
Your purse, Marie. May I have it?
My purse? Why do you want my...
It's full of matches.
Matches? Why should it be full of matches?
Because you put them there.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Let me have your purse. I'll show you. Here we are. Crowded with matchbooks, safety matches, and two of my lighters.
Oh, please don't take them, Harry.
And here are several newspaper clippings. Clippings of fires. Fire on 115th Street, a total loss. Police suspect arson and destructive fire on 3rd Avenue. And this clipping. Pyromaniac confesses how he started fire in warehouse without actual use of flame. He placed cotton waste soaked in oil underneath a pile of rags behind a stairway in a badly ventilated place. The cotton waste grew warmer and warmer until it burst into flame long after he was gone. Although he didn't get as much satisfaction as actually using a match, it was by far the safest way. Why are you saving all these clippings?
I was going to give it to you. It might be of use to you in your fire investigation work.
Yes, it would be very helpful.
Harry, where are you going?
Just going down to get a paper.
Oh, it's very late, dear. Let's go to bed.
I'm just going for a paper. I want to think over what is the best thing for us to do.
Oh, Harry.
Look, darling, go to bed. We'll talk about it tomorrow. When I returned, she was still up, busying herself with chores around the house, but I was tired and went to bed. I
couldn't sleep and waited for Marie to come in. Finally, she did come in. But she was still dressed. She brought me a hot cup of cocoa.
I brought you some cocoa, Harry.
I don't want any.
It'll make you fall asleep.
Oh, I'll get by without it.
Please, Harry, you need the sleep.
All right, leave it on the table.
It doesn't taste very good when it's cold.
I'll drink it right away.
Good night, darling.
Aren't you coming to bed?
As soon as I finish sorting out Johnny's clothes. Sleep well.
I didn't drink the cocoa because I was sure it had other ingredients in it besides the sugar and cream. I got out of bed, found an empty bottle on the dresser, poured the cocoa into it and hid it under the bed. And I lay down again and waited. It must have been 20 minutes later when I heard the door open. Softly.
Harry. Harry.
I didn't answer or stir. She looked at me, looked at the empty cup, and then walked out as softly as she had come in. Quickly dressed, but not quickly enough, for I heard the outer door close, put the bottle of cocoa in my pocket and hurried out and rang the elevator bell.
Hello, Mr. Jordan.
Hello, Steve.
Your wife just went down a few minutes ago.
I know.
She walked towards 3rd Avenue.
I know that, too. Take me down, please. I knew where she'd gone. The Compton building round the corner. I walked rapidly up to 3rd Avenue and then turned the corner. I half ran the short block and turned again and hurried to where the ugly red brick Compton building stood with its turreted roof. The street was deserted. The bright, harsh light of the street lamps made the street even more lonely. I walked up to the building and peered in. Far down the hallway where the stairway began, a figure crouched near the floor. I knew very well who it was. I walked down the hallway.
Who is it?
It's me.
Harry!
Come on, Marie. Let's get out of here.
I was only trying to...
I know what you're trying to do. Let's go home.
No,
come
dear,
on, Marie. Please, please don't protest anymore. We didn't say a word until we got into the house. She was as pale as chalk, and she looked so weary that I felt sorry for her. I was beginning to feel the strain myself. Closed my eyes for a moment, and I could see the burning matchstick with its yellow and blue flame. Marie had slumped down in a chair and was staring moodily at the floor. I took the bottle of cocoa out of my pocket and put it on the table. Marie, I didn't drink the cocoa. What did you put in it? You might as well tell me before I have it analyzed.
I ground a sleeping pill into powder. I had to do it. Harry, let's go to bed. I'm so tired, I can't even talk.
Let's get rid of all the matches. We'll burn them all. We can get a new start. I know we can.
It's no good, Harry. It won't work.
Of course it'll work, Marie, darling. We just must try.
It's no use. Too late.
It's never too late. I'm going to burn up every match in the house.
Oh, no, Harry. I don't want you to do that.
That's the best way to start.
Oh, please, Harry, don't. Oh...
See? We'll burn them all. We'll burn them all in the tray. Give me the rest of them.
No, Harry. I won't give them to you. I won't. I won't.
In the large, heavy glass ashtray on the table, the book of matches was burning quietly. Just one corner of the book was aflame. And from the other corner, a wisp of white smoke rose straight into the air, breaking near the ceiling. I thought the book would burn itself up. Suddenly the fire went out, leaving half of it unburned. I stared at the charred book and then at Marie, who had watched the flame with fascination. Let me have the rest of the matches.
No, Harry.
Give them to me at once.
Please, please, Harry, let's go to bed.
I slapped her, a And then I reached for her purse. She wouldn't let go of it and thought to hold it. I tried to twist it out of her grasp. She wrenched it out of my hand and ran towards the door. I caught her, but she fought back with the ferocity of a tigress. She clawed at me, scratching at my face. I fell back at the gate when she came after me. Picked up a heavy glass ashtray with both hands and hurled it at my head. I remembered a sharp, crushing pain and nothing. When I came to, I was alone. There was a heavy, pulsating pain in my head. At first, I couldn't remember where I was or what had happened. Slowly, it all came back. I felt my head sticky with blood, went to the bathroom, washed it, and suddenly came to me. Johnny. Where was my boy, Johnny? I ran into his room, but he wasn't there. He wasn't in his bed. She had taken him and run away. I became panicky. Where would she run? There was only one place she could go. Her sister Martha. I had to follow her there. I didn't wait for the elevator, but ran down all the six flights. Her sister lived in a four-flight walk-up, an old but remodeled building. I stood in the hallway and looked up the stairs. I knew this kind of building. If they ever caught fire, they just wrote them off the book.
Oh, please go away, Harry.
Let me in just for a moment.
What are you going to accomplish?
We must talk about it. Where's Johnny?
He's here.
I want to see him.
Here I am, Daddy. Here I am.
Johnny, where's your aunt?
She went down to get some milk for Johnny.
This hour?
There's an all-night delicatessen down the street. What's that?
I don't know.
Must be some of the neighbors.
Something must have happened.
Smoke! There's smoke in the hallway. It's coming up from downstairs.
The house is afire.
We can't go down the stairs. The smoke's too thick.
The roof's our only chance. Come on, let's go.
Daddy!
Don't be afraid, Johnny. The fire won't hurt you at all. We were on the roof, and I could see the flames pouring out of the windows below. One side of our building was an empty parking lot, and the other an apartment house. There was a 15-foot space between us and the wall. The roof of the apartment house was two stories higher. Firemen on the roof, getting ready to throw a rope down to us.
Now, take it easy. We'll get you all off.
Now, Johnny, get hold of the rope, and they'll pull you up just like a game.
I won't go alone. I want you to go with me.
Johnny, you're a big boy.
Tie the rope around his middle. That's it. Now, Sonny, look up at me, and we'll take you right up just like an elevator.
No! No!
Marie, you'd better go first.
No, Johnny goes. You must go, Johnny. I'll come right up after you.
A few minutes later, we were all safe on the ground, watching the great fire, now a mass of flames eating the building up before our eyes. Policemen came over to us.
Are you folks all right?
Yes. But my husband, this man.
What's the matter with him? Is he hurt?
Yes, he's badly hurt. He's a pyromaniac.
What?
He set fire to this house. He set fire to many houses. I can't keep quiet any longer. I can't. I can't.
Poor Marie. She just doesn't understand. She doesn't understand fires at all. Look how the cheerful flames play and laugh in the wind. Why, fire is joy. It's alive. Everybody knows that. Fire is the cleanest thing of all. It cleans everything it touches. Germs, filth, and sin. And everything that's ugly. Fire is life. It brings life into dead wood, dead things. Well, they mustn't put the fire out. It hates water. It wants to live, just like all of us. Please tell them to stop. Oh, they're choking her to death. My lovely, pure fire. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Mystery Playhouse, starring Boris Karloff. Heard The Night Reveals, another program in ABC's dramatic series, which has brought Boris Karloff to you each week, transcribed in the leading role. The program was directed by Clark Andrews. The orchestra was conducted by Bernard Green. Heard tonight were Alice Frost as Marie and Arthur Vinton as Parmenter. The script adaptation was by Sigmund Miller from a short story by William Irish. Gene Kirby speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
It's American.
American.
I'm proud. American.
I'm proud of it.
That's American.
I'm proud of it.
Yep.
Proud American.
Yep, and that was a proud American story, The Night Reveals from it Mystery sure Playhouse. Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Yep. Karloff putting in a wonderful performance. Absolutely amazing.
Did he ever not? I can't think of anything he was in that I hated.
He was on Hollywood Squares once. He didn't do too good.
No? I'm surprised.
They gave him the wrong question. They must have given him the Charlie Weaver questions, you know?
Yeah,
there you go.
It was in the Charlie Weaver box. That was the problem.
Vincent Price did pretty good. Vincent Price did pretty good.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, he did.
So did
Charlie Weaver.
Yeah, Charlie Weaver was funny. I'll go with Joanne Worley for the win.
I'd go with Joanne Worley for the win all day long. Hello. Anyway, there'd be something we could learn out of this.
I hope not.
It's not a lot, but it's something.
Well, one has to scroll, you know. One has to scroll.
Keep them doggies
and
rolling.
Then, Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Noted, I'm getting over a cold. Understand, a moth is drawn to a flame not because it has a nicotine addiction.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream.
I was waiting for that goat. I love that goat.
That goat's a fire station mascot in Nevada.
Yeah, who needs a siren when you have this?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's better than the fire.
Who needs a fire dog? Have a fire goat that sounds like this. That sounds like this.
He's mute.
Oh, sounds like this?
Yes, just like that.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Just like that.
All right, moving on to the next tale. We've got a Johnny Dollar story for you next.
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yeah. With our favorite Johnny Dollar, the best Johnny Dollar, Mr. Bob Bailey.
Yeah,
Bob
Bailey. This one fits the topic with the burning car matter.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Got good old Parley Bear in this as well.
Oh, good.
And Ernest Borgnine.
Yes.
Yeah. He played an unbilled part, unfortunately.
Well,
for Ernest.
Yeah.
He was a mute window washer.
You still get paid for those unbilled parts, though.
Yeah,
he totally uncredited. It's a crime, really, if you think about it. But
and the fact that we couldn't see the windows doesn't matter. He did a great job.
He did. He did. No windows. No windows. Good heavens.
Mute window washer. Yeah.
Radio windows, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. The Burning Car Matter. This one is from
December 9th, 1956.
Ooh. From Hollywood, it's time now for
Watch Your Windows.
Johnny Deller.
Earl Foreman here.
Foreman?
Tri-State Life and Casualty. I'm the branch office manager down here.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Foreman, but the answer is no.
Well, this is an arson case, Dollar, and we're already having to make one payoff
on
it.
I'm sorry, but it'll have to wait. I'm going to get as far away from this New England winter as I can.
Well, for that, I don't blame you, but there's no reason you shouldn't
go. Look, I've had a rough year of it. I'm tired, and I'm cold. And unless I can get down to where the warm, balmy breezes waft in...
Dollar, I have got to have you on this case. There's a lot at stake. Now, my office is down here...
No, sir, I'm sorry. You
down
see...
Down here in Sarasota.
I just can't do it, Mr. Foreman. I've already made a plane reservation for Sarasota, Florida. And this is one time I'm going to... Where did you say your branch office is?
Sarasota, Florida.
Bob Bailey, in the exciting adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Tri-State Life and Casualty Insurance Company Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the burning car matter. Expense account item one, which I thought I was going to have to absorb myself. $129, transportation and incidentals to Sarasota, Florida. It was nearly 5 p.m. when I got there, so instead of checking into a hotel, I taxied. That's item two, a dollar even. I taxied to Earl Foreman's office in the Conroy building. He turned out to be a tall, lanky, easygoing fellow with clear blue eyes and a ready smile.
Sit in an office and talk business this time of day? You're in Florida now, Johnny.
Well, I thought from your call this was a pretty urgent matter, Mr. Foreman.
It is.
Arson, you said.
Yeah, probably, but here's no reason we can't go out to my little shack on the quay and be comfortable while we talk about it. Besides, Michael wants you for dinner.
Mike?
My wife, Gertrude.
Oh.
Come on, my jalopy's right out at the curb. Come on, Johnny.
Poor man was a misnomer for this man because his jalopy turned out to be a spanking new Cadillac, complete with air conditioning and all the fixings. And the shack, anything but. It was on St. Armand's Quay across Sarasota Bay from the mainland, a beautiful two-story concrete and stucco job. The big yard backed on a quiet bayou, and there tied up at a private dock was a 24-foot lap straight speedboat, ideal for fishing the Gulf of Mexico.
After all, as long as you're down here on expense account.
Yeah, but it's charged to your company, remember?
Oh. Hey, there she is at the door.
Huh?
The big, fat, overbearing broad I'm married to.
This was another switch. For Earl's wife standing in the doorway was the cutest little trick I'd seen in a long time. Petite, pretty, and blonde, and with eyes that you noticed right away because they were almost green. Eyes that suddenly narrowed as she looked at me. And I wondered why.
Johnny, Dollar, did you say?
That's right. Insurance investigator down here to look into those fires.
Oh.
Any objections?
No. Oh, of course not. Just set your bags here in the hall, Johnny.
All right, thanks.
And wouldn't you like a drink after your long trip?
Yeah, and you can get me one, too.
Scotch, Johnny. Martin's VVO.
Oh, great. Well, soda, please.
Sit down.
Thanks. I take it Mike isn't too interested in the insurance business, huh?
She used to be a singer, a dancer.
Oh, well, this is a little different. But now, tell me all.
Well, actually, I guess we ought to wait until Arnold Carr gets back.
Carr?
Carr Brothers, Lumber Enterprises. Arnold runs the business, and his brother Edward... Well, Ed just shares the profits. Real black sheep of the family, from what I've been able to learn.
Oh?
Anyway, they have yards all over the state. There's one here in Sarasota, one up the coast a ways at Fort Pierce, and still another at Arcadia. That's about 40 miles inland, just east of here. And there was one up in Orlando.
Was?
Completely destroyed by fire a couple of weeks ago. And a $120,000 claim has been filed.
A hundred and... Wow.
Matt, That's where Arnold Carr is then, in Orlando, trying to clear things up. Here's your drink.
Oh, nice.
Hero.
Yeah. Well, to the gods and goddesses and us.
Shouldn't I be up in Orlando then?
Arnold's on his way back here now. He lives here. He just went up there to arrange for clearing off and selling the property.
You mean he's planning to just pocket the money? If Tri-State pays off, I mean.
Looks like it.
But I take it you suspect arson.
Yes, Earl suspects arson, Johnny, and so does Arnold Carr. At least he says he does, but they have no reason.
No? How about the other fires? Or attempted fires?
Oh, where?
At Arcadia, for one, but they got it out in time.
At least that's the way Arnold Carr reported it. The way he
tells
it...
Let me tell it, Mike. There was another at the yard here in Sarasota. Arnold himself discovered it one night when he was just driving around.
Well, nothing to indicate it was attempted arson.
No, and the authorities up in Orlando found no indication of it there.
Mike, you know as well as I do that a lumberyard fire will obliterate signs of arson better than any other kind of fire in the world.
But she has a point, though, Earl. Unless there's some evidence of arson.
Of course.
Yeah, why send for me?
Well, mostly because...
Actually, because Arnold Carr suspects it.
But he's given you no real reason.
None at all.
I think he has a real reason, but he just won't tell us. Wait till you see him. He's going to call when he gets in. We'll run over to his place on Longboat Key.
What about his brother? Edward, did you say?
I've never met him. He's always stayed in Orlando.
I was wondering if he might tell things that Arnold is holding back.
Edward Carr wouldn't know anything.
You can never be too sure. Look, why can't you agree with me for... That must be Arnie now. Excuse me. Hello?
This is Arnold Carr.
Oh, hi, Arnie. Johnny Dollar arrived, so we'll be... Well, here, I'll let you talk to him. Here, Johnny.
No.
Okay.
No, Earl, listen.
What?
I told you before it was arson. It was arson again tonight.
Tonight?
What's that?
Arcadia just went up in flames. The whole yard.
Good Lord. Did you hear that, Johnny?
Yeah, I heard it.
Well, can you prove it was arson tonight in Arcadia and before in Orlando?
I have proof.
Well, Arnie, we'll be over just as fast.
No.
As... What?
No. Wait for me there at your home.
Well, but look now.
You mustn't come here, and I mustn't stay here because I...
Now, listen, man. You, Arnie? Well, I guess he's ready to tell us now.
A suspicion began to grow in my mind. A suspicion that Mike apparently shared with me. That Arnold Carr himself might be responsible for the fires. After all, he was the only one who had seemed to know about the two unsuccessful attempts. He himself had planted the idea of arson. He'd lost no time in filing claim for the Orlando burnout. But Earl said I was wrong. Arnold was too honest a man. Earl had also said we were only 15 minutes from Carr's home. So when half an hour passed, we called him back. Got a busy signal. After the fourth try, the three of us took off in Earl's cab. As we pulled into Carr's driveway, we could see him through the picture window, sitting at his desk, telephone in hand, apparently engrossed in a call. Then, as we walked up to the door, I noticed something else. Arnold Carr looked enough like me to be my brother. Maybe that explained Mike's reaction when she first saw me.
Hey, Arnie!
Can't you see? He's on the phone in there.
Well, the least he can do is hear his own doorbell.
Carl, wait. Good Lord.
What's the matter?
Through the window.
Oh, no.
Earl?
Stand back.
Earl, for heaven's sake, what is it?
Couldn't you see from out there?
No, what's wrong?
Well, Johnny?
Right through the forehead, Earl. Looks like a .38. Before I could stop him, Earl took the phone out of the dead man's hand and called headquarters. Mike turned pale and slumped into a chair. And I gave the place a quick rundown, checked doors, windows, etc. A few minutes later, an officious young sergeant named Larkin arrived and took over.
.38 caliber straight through the middle of the forehead. Were all three of you here when it happened? Mr. Foreman, Mrs. Foreman, and who are you?
The answer to your first question, Sergeant, is no, none of us was here. And this is Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Hiya. You insurance guys work pretty fast. You related to Mr. Carr?
No. Why?
You look a little like him. Who busted in the front door? The killer?
I did. When we drove up, we saw Mr. Carr sitting there at his desk. We rang the doorbell and knocked, but...
When he didn't move, you took things in your own hands and busted in, huh?
That's right.
You haven't moved anything, have you?
No.
Except I took the phone out of his hand to call you.
Dollar, if you're any kind of investigator, you should have known better than let him touch anything. Now, let's see. The shot must have come from somewhere near this window by the fire... Sure, here we are. Bullet hole right through the pane. Bullet was fired from outside.
You're sure, Sergeant?
Sure, I'm sure. Look for yourself. You call yourself an investigator? Hey, Cummings, Woolett, check the area around that window beside the chimney out there for footprints. Maybe an empty cartridge case. Now, you folks get out of here so I can call Doc Hanley over and get on with my investigation. And no, Dollar, I don't need any of your help.
Well, thank you, Sergeant.
Your job is fires, not... Hey, where did Mrs. Foreman go?
Out to the car.
Why? Who told her she could leave?
Who told her she had to sit here looking at a corpse?
All right, Dollar, all right. Just be sure the three of you stick around town in case I decide to question you further.
Oh, of course, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Not shot by somebody standing outside? What do you mean, Johnny?
Oh, I spotted that bullet hole in the window, too.
So?
I also noticed there were no particles of glass on the inside sill.
But there were some on the outside.
Yeah. The shot that made that hole was fired from inside that room to make it look as though it had come from outside.
Then somebody was in there with Arnold Carr.
Yeah. Either somebody he let in or who had normal access to the house. And he had to stop Arnold from talking about the fire in Arcadia. Hey, how much do you know about his brother, Edward?
Nothing, really, outside of what Arnold told me.
Was either of them married? Family of any sort?
Arnie wasn't, but I...
Arnold's death means Edward will own the business, then.
Well, yes.
And he lives up in Orlando, scene of the first big fire.
Yes, good heavens, Johnny, you don't think his own brother...
Where can I rent a car?
Take Mike's Chevy. It's in the carport at the house, but what are you going
to
do?
Drive up to Orlando by way of Arcadia. When I got to Arcadia, only a few people were standing around the remains of the fire. One hose company was still working on it, and a couple of police were poking about in the embers. Walking toward it, I almost stumbled over a little old man sitting alone in the darkness beside a palm tree, hunched over, his head in his hands, sobbing. He didn't even look up when I stopped beside him.
It's like losing part of my own life, it is.
You lost someone in the fire, sir?
No, son. Only part of my life. I helped build up that yard... Me and Mr. Arnie.
Arnold Carr.
All along he's been worried about it. And last week when him and me smelled smoke and come over here and put out the barrel of trash that was smoldering, he knew.
Knew what? That somebody was trying to burn him up?
That's why he stopped by tonight on his way home. That's why we drove over here, him and me. And I brought my gun just in case. Well, we got here too late. It was already blazing. And when he seen the automobile... pulling away.
What auto?
Yes, Frank, he said to me. I knowed he was the one trying to burn me out, he said.
Who, old-timer? What do you mean?
He didn't say. Then he called the fire department.
That car that pulled away, what was it?
Just a auto, big white Buick.
But he tied it in with whoever set the fire.
All he said was, I knowed he was the one.
Do you know who it was he meant?
Well, he told me even if I did know, I should never tell. Even the police.
Well, who do you think it was?
Break my word to Mr. Arnie? Never, son.
All right, look, old man, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. Mr. Arnie's dead.
What? But he can't be. He was... You.
Huh?
Maybe you thought in the darkness I wouldn't know you. But I do know you...
Oh, now, just a minute, old timer.
If Mr. Arnie's dead, it's because you killed him.
What?
Just like you set the fire.
No, I'm not who you
and
think
I'll
I am.
And I'll kill you. That's what I'll do.
Put down that gun.
I'll kill you.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Back in the old days, the very old days, that is, a girl named Cassandra had a corner on the Oracle Market. But nowadays, you can do some foretelling yourself. On Jukebox Jury, for example, you can help decide which of Tin Pan Alley's new recordings are destined for the hit brackets and which ones are likely to spiral all the way down to oblivion. Remember, Jukebox Jury is yours to hear on most of these same stations every Sunday.
That song will never be a hit.
There you go.
Yeah. That was bad.
The goat you
can,
from hell.
You can decide which songs are going to make it.
And which ones are going to hit the skids.
I know. Wow. The power. I like how it said in the old days.
Yeah.
And I like the old days. They were a lot better than the new days. We haven't had a whole lot of fun with the new days.
Yeah, well, we just can't remember the old days, so that way, that's why they were always better.
My first cartoon of the year was about the fact that the new normal hadn't taken hold, hadn't gotten a foothold in 2 years. How about we have some old normal instead?
That would be all right with me.
You know, I'd be okay with that, you know.
Being old, I hardly agree.
Yeah, you don't need a breathing apparatus to go walk on the beach or whatever. You know, it'd be great.
That would be nice.
And so much has changed just in 2 years. It's just, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotten better. Anyway. Or has it?
But.
Thankfully, old radio's going to take us through to the new times.
Could you pick a new hit if you're a judge on the jukebox jury?
Jukebox jury. I think the Big Bopper is going to take off. What do you say?
Flash in the pan.
Flash in an airplane. Oh, no.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, too soon?
Too soon? No, not
too soon.
Not too soon.
That'd be like the day the music died if something like that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took me a long time for me to understand that, and then I did. I was like, man, that's a sad song.
It is.
Chevys and Levies and...
Yeah,
you know.
It's up there with Abraham, Martin, and John. God, we grew up with depressing music.
I know.
We did, didn't we?
Chevys, Levies, Palimony. It was all kinds of stuff within that song. You know.
Yeah. There's no point going to the levee, though, when, you know, the levee's dry.
When the Chevy got no, yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. So, what are we doing? Oh, Johnny Dollar.
Oh, radio.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Johnny Dollar. Yeah.
Yeah, there
Dollar.
We go. We're getting back
radio and a bunch of it.
Whole lot. Burning cars. Wait.
That's right. We're wrapping up the burning car matter.
We're wrapping it up, but I have a question. So far,
sure.
I thought the things that were burning weren't cars. I thought they were like big, huge buildings or something.
So far.
Yeah, I haven't.
So
well,
far.
Maybe there's
there
a burning
car.
Maybe
the
there's
end.
A burning
okay.
car. Maybe there's a burning car coming up.
Maybe. Well,
maybe
I don't know where my matches
rubber.
Are, so it's not me.
At least give us a hot rod with flames painted on the side. I'd take that.
Have you seen the Pinto? The Pinto that's painted with flames that are going in the opposite direction? Because the Pintos blow up in the back. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a funny one. That was really good.
Yep. So so on with the burning Pinto matter from Johnny Dollar.
Yeah.
Now, act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the burning car matter. Expense account item 3, $5.15 gas for the borrowed Chevy to keep me going to Orlando. Either the old man's eyesight was bad or he was just a lousy shot. Either way, it was okay by me. I hated to slap him down, but there was no point hanging around Arcadia trying to explain things to the local authorities. So after making sure I hadn't really hurt him, I appropriated his gun and took off fast. He'd thought I was someone else. Even I had noticed a family-type resemblance to myself in Arnold Carr. Sergeant Larkin had asked me if I was related to him. And now the old man at the fire had apparently thought I was the one who... Oh, well, I'm afraid I made the rest of the trip to Orlando in somewhat less than legal time. And at police headquarters, I barged into the office of Lieutenant Cal Hudson without bothering to be announced.
So early in the morning? Sit down while I finish that report, Mr. Carr. Thanks. I'm trying to reach you, but we got no answer to the phone at your house. Oh, that's very interesting, Lieutenant. I'm afraid I have the painful duty of notifying you that your brother Arnold down in Sarasota last night... Why did you say very interesting, Mr. Carr? Or had you already learned... Well, I'll be doggone. Yeah. You're not the first one.
Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
I can't believe it. Dollar, you look enough like Edward Carr to be his twin. You even sound a lot like him.
I take it you haven't located Edward yet.
Well, no.
Lieutenant, I think Edward Carr is the firebug we're after. And the killer.
Wait a minute.
Briefly as possible, I told him of Arnold Carr's phone call to Earl Poorman. His emotional upset just before he was killed. I told him Arnold had been murdered by someone inside the house, someone close to him. And that everything indicated that someone could very well be Edward Carr.
That's still all just theory, Dollar, without any proof. Well, I will admit that Edward is a pretty worthless playboy living off the profits of the lumberyard.
In any event, the lieutenant promised to put out an APB on Edward Carr. That was at breakfast for the two of us, item four, $3.25. Before I left him, he gave me Ed Carr's address, 1726 Allen Place. As I expected, there was no answer to the doorbell at 1726, so I tried visiting up the street. It quickly became clear that Ed Carr wasn't very popular in this otherwise quiet, well-ordered neighborhood.
Those big, noisy parties at all hours of the night. Cars parked up and down the street, blocking respectable people's driveways.
Yes, ma'am.
Once in a while you expect a person to have callers and such. Me, I have the Ladies' Bridge Club every third Wednesday, for instance.
Well, that's nice.
But these are all ladies, not like some of the trash that man and his friends have, dancing and drinking and carrying on at all hours.
Yes, you mentioned cars, Mrs.
You know, people like Mrs. Herford Robbins. She's awfully nice. And Janet Osterworthy. Now, she's a widow.
Well,
and you know, she could have her pick of anybody she liked, but does she ever look at another man? No, sir. And then there's
Mrs. Harper.
Yes?
You mentioned cars. Do you know what kind Mr. Carr drove?
Why, yes. It was a big white one.
And the make?
Well, no. My husband, when he was alive, always drove a Maxwell, and I guess that's the only kind I ever got to know by name. But Mr. Carr's is white. Only I guess that isn't much help to you, is it? All the white cars here in Florida, I mean.
Look.
Now, even that blonde hussy, who's around him all the time, drives a white car. Oh, I really shouldn't use a word like that, though, should I? But it fits.
Wait a minute. What blonde, Mrs. Harper?
Mr. Dollar. I don't pay any attention to people like that. Why, you'd think she owned that house of his. The way she keeps popping in and out all hours as if she belonged there.
Mrs. Harper.
And drives all the way up from Sarasota, too.
Do you know who she is?
I do not. I refuse to pay any attention to people like... And the way she dresses, too, like a newly rich chorus girl with all her fancy clothes and furs and things.
How do you know she comes from Sarasota?
By the license on her car, of course. Every city has its own number. You know that very well. And hers is 12WW-something.
And you don't know her name?
Of course not. Flaunting all those expensive furs as though she'd bought and paid for them herself. And if there's anything I hate to see, it's a little shrimp loaded down with furs. Now, a tall person
I
like
see.
Me...
Well,
and
thanks.
If there's anyone I don't trust, it's a person with green eyes. Well,
thank you, Mrs. Harper. Her description of Carr's girlfriend stopped me in my tracks. That description could fit Mike Poorman to the letter. Petite, blonde, green eyes, and she came from Sarasota. And then I remembered Mike's reaction when she first saw me. Her dismissal of Edward as a possible suspect. There was obvious friction between Earl and Mike, too. I figured it was just normal in a couple who'd been married for a while. But now... Item 5, $1.30 phone call from the nearest booth I could find to Earl Poorman at his office in Sarasota.
No, she isn't, Johnny. What?
Well, you know where Mike is.
When I woke up this morning, I could hear her talking to her girlfriend, Betty, on the phone downstairs.
Betty?
Betty lives here in Sarasota. They used to be on the stage together, sister act, you know.
Yeah, well,
Well, then when I went down for breakfast, she was gone. Took my car, too. I had to come here to the office in a taxi.
Yeah, well, okay, Earl. Thanks a lot.
Hey, now, wait a minute. How are you doing? You found out anything I ought to know about this arson and murder business?
No, Earl. Nothing that you need to worry about. Liar. I sat down at a corner drugstore. That's item 5, 80 cents, over a sandwich and a Coke to try to think things up. But I'm afraid I didn't like anything that I thought. Finally, I drove over to Allen Place again. I parked a couple of blocks away and walked to 1726. I rang the front doorbell, knocked a couple of times. Then I slipped around to the back door, finagled a lock on it with a little celluloid pocket calendar, finally got it open. I left it open for the sake of a quick exit if such became necessary. But I guess that was a mistake. For a couple of minutes later, as I rounded the corner from the den into the living room, I felt the barrel of a gun poked into my back.
Out of town, huh?
Now, wait a minute.
Don't move, Eddie boy. Trying to stall off, pay me the $5,000 by saying you're going to be out of town, huh?
Okay, so you think I'm Edward Carr.
You kidding? Don't you know what happens when somebody tries to stall me?
I don't know exactly how long I was out, but when I came to, it was dark. Except for the glow from a streetlight outside. And what roused me was the sound of footsteps, feminine steps, cautiously entering the back door. Then, briefly, silhouetted against the window, I saw a trim, petite figure that was all too familiar coming toward me. And she saw me, too.
Darling, you're hurt. What happened?
What do you think?
Who did this? Who struck you?
You don't know.
Yes, of course. It was Tony. Because you didn't pay him soon enough for the Arcadia job. Here, Eddie, let me help you.
No, just let me rest for a minute.
I thought that was Tony I passed on the road in from Sarasota.
Why'd you come over from Sarasota?
To see you. I knew you'd be here.
Oh, why?
Why? So the police could surprise you with the news of your poor dear brother's death. But why did you come to the house?
Because I hoped you'd come here, I guess.
Eddie, you should have waited until I could raise the money to pay off Tony.
You mean for killing Arnold, too?
Of course. No. Are you trying to say you didn't kill Arnold? That I saw you from outside in the Buick?
You'd swear to that, wouldn't you?
I don't know what you... Eddie, you sound like you don't trust me. We're in this thing together.
Yeah, you sure of that?
What are you talking about?
Whose idea was it to knock off Arnold?
But you had to. When he saw you at Arcadia, he knew that you were having the yards burned up.
That's the way you figured it from the beginning, wasn't it?
Now, look, baby.
First burn up the lumber yards and collect the insurance on them. Then convince me that you and I should have it all by putting Arnold out of the way.
But you had to kill I don't understand you, Eddie.
Yeah. I wish I didn't understand you, Mike.
Mike?
Come on. Let's turn on the light.
No. No, somebody sees us. Eddie, you... Who are you?
Are you kidding, Mike? Wait a minute. Who are you?
You're that insurance investigator Johnny Dollar that Mike told me. Let me out
of here. Oh, no, you don't. You're staying right here. Mike Pullman's sister, aren't you? Well?
Oh, sister. So we went to the sister act before she married that Pullman guy. Now, let me go.
Not by a long shot.
You may as well, Dollar.
What?
Eddie.
Don't move, Dollar. Get his gun, Betty. Get it.
Yeah, sure. Here, Ed.
Good.
Ed Carr, huh?
That's right. You know, we do look alike, you and me.
Yeah, sure. Enough for Betty here to have told me all I need to know.
Don't believe him, Eddie. He's lying.
I heard.
No, Eddie, I thought he was you. Don't you see?
Sure. Why'd you come up here anyway?
Because Mike told me that Dollar was coming up here.
You've been shooting off your mouth to her, too?
She knew about us. She thought you might have something to do with the fire. She was my friend. She was trying to get me out of this whole mess, and I wish I'd listened to
her. Well, it's too late now, baby.
Eddie, what are you going to do?
Now, I got to get rid of both of
them. No!
And figure some way to shut up Tony's mouth.
Ed, please!
You know you'd never get away with it, Carr.
Oh, no, I'll call him. That's what I'll do. Yeah, Betty, and he'll come here to get his money. Then I'll call the police, see? Tell him to come right away. Tell him I found out about you having Tony start the fire.
What?
That's right, that you had him burn up the yard so there'd be even more money for you to bleed from me, like all the dough you got from me already.
You're crazy, Ed.
I'll tell the police to meet me here. And when they come in, it'll just be in time to see me kill Tony in self-defense after getting here too late to save you, I'll tell them.
You're out of your mind. They'll check that gun of yours so fast.
And that'll prove it. Because the only shot out of my gun will be the one that gets Tony. This gun of yours is the one that's going to knock you two off. And they'll think it's Tony.
Oh, Eddie, please, you're drunk or you're crazy.
Crazy to save my own life, to keep you and Tony and Dollar from putting a noose around my neck?
If you think that harebrained scheme of yours will ever work, you're off your
rocker. It's going to work, because it's my only chance, so it's going to work now.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
I'm afraid I was too late to save it, John. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Eddie Carr will live to face a jury. What brought you here anyhow?
I did, Johnny.
Mike, stay there. Stay right here, Mike.
I know. I don't want to see it. She was my friend.
Where's Earl?
I came alone. When I talked to Betty this morning, I knew your suspicions about Ed were right, because, you see, I knew Betty and Ed were going together. Earl didn't know.
Yeah. Maybe you better call him. Expense account item 6, $9.80, gas and incidentals for the drive for the two of us back to Sarasota. Remarks? Betty, of course, has already paid for her part in the deal. And I guess it's pretty obvious what'll happen to Ed Carr and Tony Ricardo. The insurance money in the Carr estates will be distributed according to Florida law. Further remarks? The apparent friction between Earl and Mike was only part of a normal married life. They're a pretty nice pair. Oh, and I thoroughly enjoyed 3 days of fishing in the Gulf, thanks to Earl. Expense account total, including all the incidentals I could think of, $385.26. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. You don't have to be an efficiency expert to figure out that it's easier to lend your support to several worthwhile fundraising campaigns all at once than it would be helping one campaign at a time. That kind of efficiency is yours to enjoy through the United Community Campaigns. CBS Radio hopes that when the United Community Campaigns are underway in your town, that you'll remember how much good you can accomplish with one gesture of support. Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a case with a real twist. One that I think will just about tear your heart out. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harley Bear, Victor Perrin, Bob Bruce, Harry Bartell, Vivi Janis, Tony Barrett, and Junius Matthews. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cumberly speaking.
Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
When a doppelganger becomes a triple ganger, doppel, triple dopper, it's time to reshuffle the deck.
I got mail, yay!
Yay! Thank you, Ed.
When a doppelganger becomes a triple doppel.
Every time I hear Parley Bear's voice, I think of the mayor of Mayberry, which I think he played for several seasons.
He did. He did. You know, and he was also Chester on Gunsmoke, and Doc was Howard McNear, who was Floyd the Barber on on Mayberry. So, and actually, one of his biggest roles before he got to Mayberry for Don Knotts, outside of his appearances on the Steve Allen Show, he was on radio's. But he was Uncle Somebody on the B-Bar-B Ranch, I think. And that's where Andy Griffith recognized him from, was from being on that radio show. So, and I even caught an episode with one of the guys that's a regular on the Radio Mystery Theater, one of his very few episodes where he showed up on television. So they love the radio people on Andy Griffith's show.
And thank goodness they did. They brought such rich, rich, rich characters to that show.
Some of those weren't some of the people on the Andy Griffith show unknowns or actually from the Carolinas or something like that?
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't verify that. I can't verify that.
I cannot deny nor substantiate that. Sure.
What, you running for office now? Jeez and crackers.
I'll run anywhere for a buck. I don't know. There's a buck in it.
Or a Mars bar.
Or a marshmallow. Yeah,
Mars bar.
You know.
A Mars bar.
Lightsabers. I don't know.
Mars forever yours. Yes.
Marlboros.
Yeah. No, not Marlboro.
Okay. A mile.
Oh.
So would you walk a, walk a mile for a Mars bar?
Mars
no,
bar.
For Marlboro, yes.
There was some type of what was that? It's like an ice. What would you do for a Klondike bar? Yeah, something like that.
Oh yeah, that was that was a different twist on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What wouldn't I do?
A lot more fire going on.
Yeah.
We do have more fire.
Yep. Yeah, we're burning it up here. On Erie House with another horror star in this one, from Crime Does Not Pay.
Yeah, you can't take the Hungarian out of this guy.
You cannot.
No, I think you're going to recognize which actor is Bela Lugosi quite quickly.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
I think he's going to be easy to identify. I'm not sure, but you want to test your listening skills for this show.
Although this was a very ethnic episode. There were all kinds of people identified, and it was amazing.
Yep.
Especially Hungarian, but other folks.
Especially
too.
Hungarian, yes.
Especially, definitely. Lots
of paprika.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. Don't know what that means.
And pulled yak, or something like that, whatever they eat there.
Ooh, cold yak. No, I need mine warmed up.
Oh, okay.
Not too hot, but just warmed up a little. Or is that what the
paprika
is for?
You like a good warm yak.
Yeah.
Cognac,
a good warm
maybe,
yak.
But not yak.
For winter
goat.
Time.
There.
Yep.
I feel better now. I feel
that
better.
Guy, too. Yak, goat, anything.
Most people wouldn't, but I find that goat very soothing.
Don't you?
My,
I know.
I do. I really do.
I put it here on my desk. My wife was just... That's better than the stress ball. She said I could use that yesterday.
Wouldn't it be great to have one of the squishy things and you squish it and it goes, wah! Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, the bulgy eye things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Squeeze it
but,
once
but with
and
the
you
sound
hear...
effect in it, too.
Or?
Yeah.
Or?
There it is. Yeah. There you go. You might disrupt some of your coworkers if you had a stress ball like that. I think maybe the Johann Scream or whatever might have been a goat. Pretty close.
It's a scream fest.
Hey,
we
better
get into. We
what do you think
get into Lugosi?
All that screaming from fire. So much fire!
Okay. Look at that. Count
whole
on
lot
CW.
Of radio going on here.
Count on CW. She has not only the correct spelling of Bela Lugosi's birth name.
Oh.
With the right accents and tildes and whatever those pronunciation punctuation marks
Schwoz,
mean. Bela Ferencdasho Blasco.
Yep.
That's easy for you
Bela
to say.
Blasco.
That's easy for you to scream.
Yeah, that's right.
Eastern European. Oh, you're just a scream. We got a lot of radio left here, or plenty enough.
Whole lot.
Crime does not pay.
Crime for 2022, we didn't miss a beat.
Actually, based on a series of short 20-minute film shorts from MGM that ran from 1935 to 47, the radio show ran from... Oh, sure. There it is. Ran from basically October 49 through October 51, then over to Mutual for January 7th through December 22nd of 52. So that's where these come from. The crime does not pay.
This one entitled Gasoline Cocktail, and it's from?
December 12th, 1949.
So they say.
Crime does not pay.
It's all about the hours.
Sylvie, I'm going out.
This time of night? What for?
The fire is near here.
You and your fire. What are you, a little boy? Stop chasing fire engines. Grow up.
That was my mistake, growing up.
Of all the silly things to say.
Silly, is it? What else is there to do for excitement?
I could mention a few things, like taking your wife out, for instance.
I mean real excitement. Action! Like the ladders going up, the hoses dragged up the fire escapes, people jumping into nets, all the bells, the sirens. Oh, what's the use? They're coming back already. A small fire. Someday there's going to be a real fire in this neighborhood. A real fire.
Nick, stop it. When you talk like that, you frighten me.
In the interest of good citizenship and law enforcement, we present Crime Does Not Pay, based on the famous Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer series of short subjects. In just a moment, you will hear Gasoline Cocktail, starring Bela Lugosi. Crime Does Not Pay, starring Bela Lugosi as Nick Segedin in Gasoline Cocktail. Sometimes the trouble begins out of sheer frustration. The need for excitement, the need to blow off steam, can cause a man's mind to work in devious ways. There's the thrill holdup. The beating administered more to the world at large than to the immediate victim. The theft for the sake of the dare it represents. With Nick Segedin, it was the lighted match, the licking flame, and of course the roar and scream of the fire engines racing through the city streets.
Two lines in the front door. Line up 74 and 56 engines. There's pipes standing by.
Third floor, gone, chief.
All right. Pull out the men from 25 foot. Denny, turn in the second. This one's too hot for us to handle without help.
Yes, sir.
Chief, the 6th Battalion ordered me to report to you, sir. We're 22 truck.
22 truck. When did you get here?
First due on the 2nd.
All right, I'm releasing you. Go back to quarters.
Yes, sir.
Driver, notify dispatcher. All second alarm equipment released and sent back to quarters.
Well, Chief,
yes.
You almost had yourself a nasty one, didn't you?
Oh, Warren. Well, how's the fire marshal's business?
Still doing things with magnifying glasses?
Microscopes these days. I see you had 3 boys hurt.
Nothing too bad. Punctured hand, cut cheek. And we were lucky this time. The stairwell was like a chimney. Fire mushroomed up onto the 3rd floor. Took 6 women down the ladders. You find anything yet?
Looks like the usual. baby carriage full of trash under the stairs. Cigarette, match, boom. I'll see you around, Chief.
Right, Warren. Chances are you will.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Hmm?
You are the fire marshal?
Yes. How'd you know?
I've seen the car in which you came to the fire. Since I was a boy in Hungary, I followed the fires.
I guess boys are boys all over the world.
Yes, all over. But I wish to know, have you found out how this started?
We found out where it started. Why do you want to know?
Oh, it's just that I'm interested in these things. And this is a bad one.
Bad isn't the word for it. We're just lucky no life was lost.
Yes, very lucky indeed. Thank you. Thank you very much. If people only were more careful where they throw matches. I'm going out.
This time of night? What for?
The fire is near here.
You and your fires. What are you, a little boy? Stop chasing fire engines. Grow up.
That was my mistake, growing up.
Of all the silly things to say.
Silly, is it? What else is there to do for excitement?
I could mention a few things, like taking your wife out, for instance.
In the old days in Budapest, you ran after the engines with me.
No, I wish I hadn't.
There was excitement then. Now what? A job to go to with men I would not care to look at. Then back to this house, day after day, night after night.
No, Nick, not night after night. And even though you don't care to look at the men, you look at a girl, all right.
Sylvie, this is...
I know her name, Edna Hall, and her address, 5546 Erie Street. Yes, I know. But if you think, Nicholas Sagan, that I let go of you, you are wrong. Wrong.
But don't you see this is all in your mind?
In my mind? I walked past her house.
Of course there is a house in your mind. This, all this is like myself and the engines. You wish for excitement, and there is none. So, my poor Sylvie, you make it up out of your head. That I, your Nicholas, go for rides in a car with another woman. Tonight, my dear Edna, tonight you are more lovely than I ever seen you.
Oh, Nick, you're teasing me again.
Listen.
What's the matter, darling?
You hear them, the fire engines.
Oh, that, yes.
I will go to the fire, too.
Nick, you're like a little boy.
You do not mind this?
No, I don't. But a cop would mind the way you're passing red lights.
Oh, for a moment, I think I'm really driving the big truck.
But you're not. Oh, Nick, there they are. See all the red lights up there?
I see them. Edna, you're excited, too.
Oh, who wouldn't be?
It's nothing. They haven't even taken the hose off the hose truck. There's nothing to watch.
Why, Nick, shouldn't you be glad it wasn't much?
But perhaps it was discovered too soon. Oh, yes. I'm glad. Now, let's stop here, near the park. It's a good place to stop, huh, Edna?
Oh, yes, darling. Oh, Nick, I wish I could bring you home with me. But you know how Dad is. He thinks you're too middle-aged for me.
Perhaps I am. No.
Oh, you. Nick. Nick, you're wonderful.
And you are more than wonderful. I cannot be without you.
Is this a proposal, Nick? Are you asking me to marry you?
I cannot ask that, my beloved. She's not well. There cannot be a divorce.
I'm sorry, Nick. I guess you'd better take me home.
So, you too are like all the others.
Nick!
The rides, the kisses, but always we must be married. Is love nothing in this country without marriage? Nothing?
Nick, people will hear you.
Oh, so let it be. I'll take you home. Again, I'm rejected.
there will be a day. The day for Nicholas Segedin will come soon.
Nick, what in heaven's name are you doing in that closet?
Looking for something.
Why didn't you ask me first?
All right, I ask you second. The glass jug, which came the wine from your father. Where is it?
Right up there on the shelf. I straightened the closet yesterday.
Thank you. You need this rag, Sylvia?
No. What do you want with it? No.
Always questions.
Oh, Nick. You've been like your old self these past few days. You've been home at night.
I told you once I'm not changed.
What do you want with the jug?
I am cleaning the seats in the car. So I will draw gasoline from the tank into the jug, and with that rug, I will wipe. Very simple, isn't it?
Oh, be careful, won't you, dear?
Careful.
Yes. Gasoline burns and explodes. Be careful.
Yes. I will be careful. Very careful. But like everything in this world, if the gasoline explodes in the proper place, it is all right.
Explode? Where, Nick? Where?
Where else but in the motor of the car? Where else?
Almost ready to turn out the light, Jess?
I am ready, Edna.
All right, hop her to bed.
Oh, your bed is softer than mine. That's one reason why I like to spend the night at your house.
What's the other reason? I like to talk in the dark like this. What about Jess?
Oh, just anything. It's easy to talk in the dark. That's why I come over. You know, Edna, you're only a few years older than I am, but you know so much more.
I'm flattered. I wish it were true.
Jen! What's that?
Through the window. Somebody threw something. It's burning! Edna!
Hammond, Denny, truck 25 reporting, Chief. We found a couple of roasts on the first floor.
Whereabouts, Denny?
Room where the fire started, sir. Seems to have been a bedroom, sir. The metal frame of the bed is still recognizable.
Anything on the man in the other bedroom?
Yeah, doctor said it's smoke poisoning and shock. He'll be all right.
Okay. There's a public ambulance coming down from City Hospital. Have it take the bodies to the morgue, but don't bring them out on the street until the ambulance is here.
Yes, sir.
And notify the dispatcher I'm releasing 22 truck and 74 engine. Well, if it weren't for those two deaths, this might not have been as bad as it looks.
In just a moment, Crime Does Not Pay will continue with Gasoline Cocktail.
Can only guess, but maybe a gasoline cocktail is very much like a Molotov cocktail.
Yes, Molotov. They use vodka and
you use what you got.
Twizzle sticks.
Yeah, Twizzle sticks.
Yeah. Whatever you got.
Mountain Dew doesn't do that.
No, Mountain Dew is usually not flammable. Depends what flavor.
Although, in the commercials, it would blow up, so I don't know.
Yeah,
but actually, Mountain Dew has an anti-inflammatory in it.
Really?
So I will never spontaneously combust.
That is good.
Well, we hope not. But if it happens, we hope it happens on radio.
No. That's got to be on YouTube right there. That.
I could get a few hits on YouTube with that, yeah.
I think you could.
I think it'd go either way. It'd be a great sound bite and a video. You know, hey, you know.
Yeah, the sound bite. I wonder what it would sound like if you were lit on fire.
I think it sounds something like this.
Maybe like a goat. Yeah, there you
yeah,
go.
That's what, yeah. Dave, you're a master at picking up cues.
See, I think that would be the sound if you actually tried to consume the entire bottle of whatever that was, Mountain Dew.
Or trying to consume
bottle.
A goat. Because if you
when it comes out, you might make that noise.
If you try to consume a goat before it's fully cooked, you might hear something like. Yes,
or
very
if
much
you
like
try
that.
To milk, or if you try to milk a goat and it's not a female, you'd hear that.
Yeah.
Or if you asked a goat to file taxes, they might make that noise. If you asked a goat to change your flat tire, it might make that noise.
It might.
He'd probably eat it. He'd probably eat the tire.
Well, that too. But then, you know, on the way out, it might make that noise. You know,
See, we're getting to the CW now. We got to be careful of that.
Yeah, we got to behave. Coca-Cola and Mentos. Yes, Coca-Cola and Mentos. Kaboom.
So I did notice this, Dave, that two of our programs this evening it came to us from the year 1949.
Yep.
Good year for fire.
A good year for arson, yeah. Good year for arson and fire.
Oh, okay.
Fire, it's fascinating. Fascinating. Let's finish up. Crime
Surprise,
does not
there
pay.
Isn't a fire story with that guy in it. Oh, he did My Old Flame with Spike Jones. Very funny.
There you go. Yes.
He did. Yep.
There we go with Gasoline Cocktail. Crime does not pay.
We continue with Crime Does Not Pay, starring Bela Lugosi as Nick Sagadin in Gasoline Cocktail. Whenever death has been caused by fire, even under the least suspicious circumstances, the fire marshal is joined in his investigation by the district attorney's office and the police. Therefore, the day following the death of Edna Hall and her guest Janice, three men checked over the wreckage of what had been the girl's bedroom. Fire Marshal Warren, Assistant District Attorney Morrison, and Detective Stein.
The girls must have been sleeping soundly for it to get so much headway.
A neighbor who pulled the box said he heard what sounded like an explosion.
Seen anything of a gas heater or an oil stove?
The building steam heated.
Oh.
The men on the first truck to respond said it looked like an oil fire to them.
Hello.
Find something, Marshal?
What's this look like to you, Morrison?
Piece of glass. Too heavy for a light bulb. But
what do you think, Stein?
Oh, perfume bottle, maybe. One of those things girls like to have on dressing tables.
It's a mighty big bottle. Look at the curvature of the glass.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Oh, wouldn't the heat of the fire have melted it?
Not without blackening it some.
Anyhow, I found this in a corner behind the fire.
Behind it?
In this oven?
Yeah.
Notice that corner near where the window was? Barely a smoke mark. Something forced the fire away from there and tossed this glass fragment in there.
Explosion is right, then. Hey, wait a minute. How about this?
Looks like the neck and the handle of a gallon jug.
Saw it a minute ago and passed it up. It's the same glass as the Marshall's fragment.
The microscopes will prove that for us. Now hold it up the light a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Here. There. See those bits of, lint, I guess, on the inside of the bottleneck?
Yeah, they look like it.
One will get you 10, they are. That's how it started, all right. A jug of gasoline with a lighted rag in its neck passed through the window. Boom.
Molotov cocktail.
What's that, Stan?
I said Molotov cocktail. We use beer bottles against Nazi tanks in the Bulge. Same principle. And pretty much the same effect.
We'll try not to be too long, Mr. Hall. In fact, I'm sure the doctors won't permit us to stay more than a few minutes.
That's all right, Mr. Morrison. Anything I can do to help.
We're convinced, Mr. Hall, from various bits of physical and chemical evidence, that the fire in your daughter's room began with a gasoline explosion.
Yes, we think it came from outside, Mr. Hall. A gasoline grenade through the window.
From outside? Oh, then you think it was murder, too?
Do you, Mr. Hall?
It's a grim charge on just my personal dislike of a man.
As someone who had cause to, well, want your daughter out of the way?
Yes. She thought she was in love with him. I refused to let him in the house. She was meeting him outside. I knew it. Then she found out he was married. She broke it off with him. He was... Well, I didn't like him, that's all.
You know his name, Mr. Hall?
Yes, it's Nick Zegedin. He worked where Edna did. You can get his address there.
Yes?
Mrs. Zegedin?
I am she.
I'm from the district attorney's office. My name is Morrison. This is Fire Marshal Warren, Detective Stein. May we come in, please? You can see our credentials if you wish.
Oh, no, no. Come in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please, sit down.
We'd like to see your husband. We understand he hasn't been to work for 3 days.
I'd like to see him, too.
When did you see him last, Mrs. Segedin?
Three nights ago. He went out. He did not come back.
Did he do anything funny that night, ma'am?
No, nothing. Just he went out to clean the seats of the car.
With what, Mrs. Segedin?
Oh, with gasoline.
Where'd he get it? The gasoline, I mean.
From the car, in a glass jug in which we had wine.
Well, that makes some sense.
What do you think he has done?
We think he killed someone. A girl named Edna Hall. And we think he used the gasoline.
You better tell us where he's gone, ma'am.
I don't know. I knew she was dead. I saw it in the paper. I don't know where he went.
One question, ma'am. Does your husband have any family anywhere in this country?
Yes, an uncle, Joseph, in Miami. But he wouldn't go there.
Thank you, Mrs. Segedin. He might not go there, and then again, he just might. All right, Stein. It looks as if you're going south this year, if only for a day or two.
Well, nice place you've got here, Mr. Segedin. Bet you do a swell business during the season, eh?
Good, not so good. We get along. You see what you like?
You betcha. 5 pounds assorted.
5 pounds? We must make up. It's not ready.
Not many 5-pound customers this time of year in Miami, eh?
Not many. You do not mind waiting?
Oh, no. Go to it. From what I hear at the hotel, sweet spies, Segedin are worth waiting for.
You try a truffle while you wait, yes?
Hey, thanks. Yeah, that's good. Very good. Service like this we don't get in New York.
Huh, you live in New York?
Yeah. My hometown.
I have nephew in New York.
That's so? What's his name? Maybe I know him.
If you do, you know my name. He is Nicholas Segedin. And that is a name nobody forgets. Besides, he moved just last week.
That's so? Where to?
Not far. He writes me postal cards, say he is tired of New York City. He moved to East Orange, New Jersey. Street with very funny name. Porter Street. 118 Porter Street. Like maybe the street carry his suitcase for him.
It's a very funny name. Funny joke. You got a phone booth here?
Yes, sir. Right behind.
Thanks. While you're finishing up that box, I think I'll make a call. I just remembered. I've got to warn someone about a fellow I know. A fellow who likes to play with matches.
You like the fire in the fireplace, Nicholas?
Very much. Why?
You stare at it, though. All day as you watch the fire.
I'm lucky, Lena. When I rented the room from your mother, I didn't expect that her daughter and the parlor, fireplace and all were included.
Nicholas, You make fun of me.
I should say not.
But of course not.
Then the log falls, so it always makes me jump.
Time for another log, isn't it?
No, it is too warm in here, Nicholas. You do not need another log. The fire will be too high.
Fires are never too high, Lena. Watch the flames. See? It's like a dance. So light, so graceful. But such power, such strength to the flame, Lena, even from a little match. A whole house sometimes from a single little match.
Nicholas, you must not talk like this.
What then? Must I talk about your eyes, your hair, your pink cheeks?
You do make fun of me, Nicholas. I don't know about flames, but I know when someone makes fun of me.
You are a silly one. Come back here.
No, I will go upstairs. I don't like you, Nicholas. I thought I did, but I don't.
What's wrong with me? Lena, my dear.
I don't know. Inside, maybe something is wrong. No, Nicholas. I do not want to sit and talk with you anymore.
They all run away like rabbits, and they don't know why. Tomorrow I find another room. I cannot live with rabbits, but this rabbit will feel my anger. This she will know before very long.
Miss Korski?
Yes?
Your mother in, Miss Korski?
No, officer. She's downtown.
Well, may we come in? This is Mr. Morrison, New York District Attorney, and Fire Marshal Warren.
Fire? Yes, you may come in.
Right, gentlemen. All right, Mr. Morrison, you can take it from here.
Thank you. Miss Korski, is there a rumor here by the name of Nick Segedin?
Nick? Yes, sir.
Is he at home?
Yes, sir. That is, I think so. He has the front room, second floor.
You ever notice anything, well, peculiar about this man, miss?
Peculiar? No, only he likes big fires in the fireplace.
Sounds like your man, gentlemen.
Yes, let's drop in on him.
Right. Which way, miss?
Upstairs. First door on the right.
Thanks, miss.
I wouldn't come any further, gentlemen, if I were you.
All right, take it in. We're here to take you in for arson and the murder of Edna and Janice Hall.
This is easy to say. I have a bottle, a beer bottle, gentlemen, filled with gasoline, corked with a piece of rag. I have intended it as a parting gift for my landlady and her daughter. The house is full of mice. I find this a very effective means.
No use, Segedin. We've got you dead to rights, and you know it.
One step more, gentlemen.
Arson, Warren.
Stop, look out!
Oh, get that bottle, Marshal.
All right, I've got it. Nice shooting, officer.
Oh.
All right, it doesn't hurt that much, Segedin. It's only through your shoulder. It'll be fixed up good as new long before you burn for what you've done.
Crime does not pay. Bela Lugosi, who will star as Nick Segedin in Gasoline Cocktail, will be back with you in just a moment. Here in person is Bela Lugosi. It is perfectly possible that Nick Segedin is more to be pitied than censured. Legally, Nick was sane, and he paid the penalty exacted by society. But society itself bears a large part of Nick's guilt. Nick never found proper training and education. Nick never found the opportunity to release his energies in the right direction. So you see, as always, it comes back to us
the responsible citizens of our community. If we see to it that the roots of crime, the social conditions which breed gangsters and warp people like Nick, are removed, we will have taken a long step on the way to a better world for ourselves as well as the criminals. Crime does not pay. Thank you, Bela Lugosi. Crime Does Not Pay is written by Ira Marion and directed by Marks D. Loeb, with music composed and conducted by John Gart. Technical advisor is Burton B. Turkus. The events, characters, and names used in the story you've just heard are fictitious. Any similarity is purely coincidental.
Stories tonight are largely fictitious
and highly flammable.
Yeah, you're gonna have you got big shoes to fill there, buddy. You got big shoes to fill. We just had a moral from Bela Lugosi, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
A fire triangle requires oxygen, heat, and fuel. What it doesn't take into account is the idiot handling the flames.
Okay, good enough.
There you go. Bella is getting paid by the word.
There you go.
I have no idea. There's no reason for this.
I got nothing. Bring back the goat. There you go.
Ah, the goat.
Hey, guys. I was strolling through the old-time radio researchers website. Found 15 of my WCRS radio stages there. I contacted them and offered them the rest of my stories along with episode numbers and dates, broadcast dates, which they took, and they're also going to, at some point here, make an appearance on Erie House Radio and talk about the old-time radio researchers group.
I would love to awesome. Hear from them. They're a big group.
They're a big group. Big group.
Big.
So that's really
big
cool.
Time.
Really big.
Yep.
Coming.
Looking
Erie
forward
House
to that.
Erie House Radio near you.
Looking forward to that. Also looking forward to tomorrow night. Ordeal by Fire with, get your kicking boots on, Julie Newmar. That's tomorrow night.
That's where it ties in.
Radio Mystery Theater, so get that. We're going to have CW, hopefully, Julie Newmar and CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Ernest Borgnine.
In an uncredited role. And
it happens in threes. Betty White, Peter Bogdanovich, and Sidney Poitier. I didn't know Sidney was still alive.
Well, see, some of these folks, they've lived a full, I mean, Betty White, 99 years. You know,
yeah, what can you complain about?
48, 91.
And she was
well,
in great shape
out
for most
actually,
of it. She was in great shape
somebody,
for most
somebody
of
Somebody said she actually proved she actually made it to 100 because of all the leap days that she has lived through, therefore
yeah,
she actually made it through.
That makes her 128. Yeah, okay, sure.
Before we forget to mention and run out of time, tomorrow night, that's 6:30 Eastern for that CBS Radio Mystery Theater Classic. And what happens after that at 8? What can one do? What
after
can
that,
one do?
Wait.
One can scream like a goat, or
on Twitch, the return after 2 or 3 weeks of Horrible Horrors starring Gar the Ghoul. Be there, be square, all that. And scream like a goat. There you go.
CW did the math. Betty White was 99.9.
unless her corpse passes the international dateline, and that'll push her over the limit right there.
There you go. We can do that too.
They should put her on a jet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've been around the world
on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Trick candle.
Sun's already out.
Yep. I don't mind. I do my
I was wrong.
In the dark.
He was 91. He was 94, Sidney Poitier. So, and I enjoyed his work. I really did get a kick out of that man's contribution to music and theater and television and everything he did.
Oh, man, they've been running a bunch of his movies on some of the Pluto channels I watch. What was on recently, To Sir With Love? What's that one, the Defiant Ones, I believe, in which he was a chain to Tony Randall. Or no, Tony Curtis, rather. And Lilies of the Field, what a charming story that is. I like that one.
Yes. Yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was the Heat of the Night with Rod Steiger.
Yes. They call me Mr. Tibbs.
Yeah,
damn
that too. And, of course, guess who's coming to dinner?
Guess he's coming to dinner, yeah.
I don't know.
To Sir With Love, wasn't that one? Too?
No.
Yeah.
That was the first one. He was
we
the
mentioned.
One that was coming to dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sir With Love was the first one we mentioned. With Lulu, who also sang the theme.
Yeah, with Lulu,
Hit song. Hit song, yeah. Ah, memory lane. What's left of it? Your memory was in hyperdrive there, Gar.
I was trying to recall some of the 7,578,326 jobs I used to have.
That was quite an impressive list.
And not complete. I thought of some more while I was later. Didn't I do that? You know, like, there's some things I never did. I never did some of the things you were talking about, which was, I forget.
I've done a lot. I've done a lot. McDonald's.
What was it?
Shoveled horse.
I worked
shoveled
at
horse stuff. So you never shoveled horse stuff. Dale did that.
I have shoveled horse droppings. Yes. Security guard. Mortgage
security guard.
Officer.
Lifeguard thing. Never did that. Could have done it. I was a certified scuba diver and many other things.
Tool and die apprentice. Tool and die apprentice.
I worked on an offset press once, a long time ago.
Well, you actually
had to pull the handle down. It was really wild.
They should have fixed it if it was offset.
Yeah, I should have. But
I think
that
Gar,
wasn't my job.
Gar, we're known as what is called a job jumper.
I like to call myself a Renaissance man because there's more syllables, you know.
Yeah, it sounds more impressive, and it looks good on the resume.
It does.
Yeah.
I worked in a movie theater.
I worked in a movie theater, so, yeah, that was in there, too. That was
Usher
in a movie theater.
That was fun. Then there was that little DJ thing I did there for a while.
As a teenager, I raised, like, $600 or $700 for cystic fibrosis or multiple sclerosis, I don't know, some malady. I forget what it was.
What did you do to raise that money? Is it safe to ask?
Oh, robbed a bank. Yeah, bank robber.
Oh, rob people.
Oh, like Robin Hood.
Rob from the rich and give to the stabled. That's just like Robin Hood, right? Rob from the rich and give to the stabled.
Yeah.
Well,
as long as
I think
you don't
Robin
ask
Hood
for a
gave,
sheet, you're
I
good.
Think Robin Hood gave his money to the Church of Scientology. I'm not sure.
Oh, and that's why... Tom, whatever his name is, so rich. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that guy, that man's a crazy. He's crazy as Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I don't know. He had a beautiful wife, and then she figured out he was crazy, and she left him.
Yep.
It was like,
yeah, more than one beautiful
you know?
Wife. He's had like what three beautiful wives?
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah, but Kidman, yeah. She is, to me, she's a, like just so incredibly attractive.
Kidman, and then there was a few others. I can't remember.
Yeah. Katie Holmes was one, but there was someone in between.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that and Katie Holmes, I think.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't listen to the other ones. They married him anyway.
Yeah, I don't know what's up.
What they, maybe they ought to redo like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And let's see, who could we put in it? Mel Gibson, Tom Cruise. Let's see, who else? Oh, Randy Quaid.
Ernest Borgnine. No, what?
Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
I like Randy Quaid. Randy Quaid knows what's funny. That's what I like. That.
Yeah, but no, I mean somebody who's insane in real life. Like,
yeah.
Guys.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
That guy.
He's done some awful strange things.
The guy
yeah.
that was like
awful
Saving things. Arizona or something like that.
Nick Cage. Yeah, you got to have
yeah,
Nick Cage.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. There you
yeah.
go. Absolute. There you go. That
Here's
would round
a kind
it
of
out.
Obscure movie with him. I, you guys might like it. It's called
Matchstick
Men.
Yeah, there's something
Men.
About him thinking he was a vampire, and he wasn't.
No. There's an obscure film. I don't know. I think it's from the 90s. It's called Matchstick Men.
Don't know it.
And it's got a weird kind of a twist ending to it. A Matchstick Man is a con artist, and he's a con artist in it. And he's got
mm-hmm.
these crazy tics, quirks. And it's
uh-huh.
funny.
Yeah.
You know, knowing Nick Cage, it's Nick Cage, and he's even quirkier than the character from Raising Arizona.
Well, the one where he thought he was a vampire, but he wasn't a vampire, that was really
yeah.
bizarre and funny at the same time. Just
yep.
like, wow. I mean, well, okay. Now, I'll put this out there. I don't think I'm going to do anything to deter listeners or anything, but being a horror movie host, okay, so, you know, I'm God of the Ghoul, blah, blah, all right. But
all right.
Over time, I've gotten a few folks that are like, I'm a vampire. Yeah, this is great. And I'm like, more power to you. I hope that works out for you.
Yeah.
I guess
we're
going to
be drinking at different
that,
bars,
you know?
Buddy.
You know?
Well,
that's
like, only real-life blood suckers were lawyers.
Yeah.
Well,
oh.
yeah.
There you go.
I've
oh, you're an attorney.
People. Yeah. I've run across people, and they have claims of being supernatural somethings. And I'm like, I just tell jokes. I don't know what you got going on.
And
yeah,
there's a lot of people. And again, not to light any fires, but there's a lot of people living in a fantasy world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a big difference between Gar the Ghoul and Gar the Knot. You know?
Oh, that guy hardly exists. We hardly know where.
Yeah, I know.
Who that is.
Yeah. But
he's a hell of a nice guy, though, from what I hear.
We know he's not a vampire.
My sources tell me he's a hell of a nice guy.
Heck of a nice guy. Got some hang up with robots, but yeah, other than that, nice guy.
I just mean in general. You,
especially
you're...
robots with silly eyes, man.
Yeah, man.
I'd rather be around people who laugh most of the time than gripe most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I have a regret. I will go to the grave regretting that I didn't put googly eyes on the robots I sent you.
Oh, no.
Should have done that.
I'm okay without the googly eyes.
Well, you can go to Walmart and get some googly eyes. You get the multi-pack that's got like six different size of googly eyes. You'll find one that fits.
I will
it's
have
in
to
there.
Put it on the shopping list. There we go. Googly eyes, assorted sizes.
Oh my gosh, I saw this. This is real. And this is almost as bad as the person saying, "Hi, I'm a vampire." Someone ran across a cat. They adopted the cat. The
ran
cat
across
had
the cat.
They adopted the cat. And the cat had had an accident of some type, and they had to remove the eye.
Oh.
So the cat, you know, now animals bounce back, and this cat
but
is doing okay.
Popeye?
No, they took a googly eye and they put it in place of the missing orb.
No,
and there was nothing more disturbing than looking at the cat with it one googly eye. The true story. There's photographs of this cat, and I'm like, I would be so off put to say, "Hi, kitty. Oh my gosh, what's wrong with you?" Googly eye, right there. I was like, oh no. Yeah, the goat. The goat would be screaming all day. The goat would never stop screaming if he saw this cat. Just, wow. Just, my googly eye. Just, oh. Now, okay, let's see. In my life, I've had a possum that was like a family member in that we brought him in, and he was missing an eye. At no point in time did I ever think googly eye. Never. Yeah. It would have freaked me out.
Actually, I would not be surprised if you had.
With a googly eye.
I would be not surprised if you had done that. So.
Yeah, no. Any animal, like some of the other animals that I've run across, like if you saw a squirrel come up to you and it had one googly eye, and be like, oh my God. Or I've actually had these, and they're friends and stuff, but a skunk come up to you and has one googly eye, it'd be like, oh my God.
I can think of nothing worse than a one googly eyed squirrel coming up to me and saying, give me your nuts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Squirrels are a lot of fun. I've had squirrels. I have some photographs. I thought I'd sent you some with a squirrel on my arm. You know, when I was younger,
I don't know. People have sent me really disturbing pictures of squirrels. I don't. No more.
No, I don't. Not disturbing. They were just.
Oh, there's some really disturbing ones out there.
There was a squirrel. He was on my shoulder. He was on my arm. At one point, you know, I was holding him or something. He was a cool squirrel. We had several squirrels. They were pretty cool.
I had four of them in the yard the other day tormenting the dog. They were jumping on the fence out of his reach and like, nee, nee.
Oh, okay.
The dog's going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, my dog would run the fence line a little bit.
Well, he did a little bit of that, too.
Yeah, but man, if one of those squirrels would have had a googly eye.
You know, when I saw that one Geico commercial about the squirrels that were teasing the car and ran off and had an accident so it wouldn't run over the squirrels, and they ran off and chuckled, I believed it.
Yeah.
That's the way squirrels are.
Yes.
Those are real squirrels.
Yeah.
True story.
I'm an animal.
The names have just changed to protect the innocent, that's all.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't, like, have a sensor block over the squirrels' faces.
I'm a big time animal enthusiast, but my mom told me she knew someone and that they ran their car off the road to avoid hitting an animal, and in doing so, that was the end of that person.
Hard to think. What I think about that, because in a way it's like, well, that's nice, but that maybe wasn't real smart. I don't know.
Or maybe they could have been going slower. I don't know. You know,
depends on the animal. Depends on the person if I feel bad or not.
Another entrant for the Darwin Awards.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it goes.
And they are many. People have died in really stupid ways. We could do a show on that.
Oh,
yeah,
man. Oh, there's a song. There's a song about stupid ways to die. Somebody said it's a horrible earworm.
Hundred ways to die or something like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's an earworm. Once you hear it, it's like, oh, my God, it sticks with you for the day. but none of those ways is avoiding an animal and driving into a tree.
That's never good.
It should be on there. Yeah. Buddy. Googly-eyed cat. Someone posted that last month, and I was like, wow. Oh, wow. And the more I saw it, I was
wrong.
Like, just Google it. Yeah, see, this is the thing, is they said that they put it on the cat to bolster its self-esteem.
Oh, yeah, I don't think
I've never seen a cat look in a mirror, okay? Not once.
Well, and they have dignity. If they did, that would be very upsetting to a cat. They cats think they're cool.
Cats truly believe that they are cool. Even if it looked in a mirror, it would go, that's a cool googly eye. But no, that was just, every time I saw that, I was just like, oh. But you know, if you had that cat floating around the house and had a googly eye, every time it walked up and went, meow, you would just start giggling. I mean, I'm sorry, you would. So how does that help its self-esteem? I don't get it. You know, I
don't know.
You know, googly-eyed cat. I don't know. See, I got an artist friend of mine. He's having problems painting eyes. And I said, well, just kind of, you know, get the flesh tone in there the right then. And then just go to Walmart, get you some googly eyes, put them on. You could become the googly-eyed painter. And you never paint eyes. You just stick those things on there and have a good day.
It's like the mad mustache drawer, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
It could be the googly eyes.
Yeah. You know. And you can turn the painting around. You can put the painting on a dais so it spins on the wall, and the eyes would follow you.
The googly
Here's
eyes.
The song, guys.
Because they're googly eyes. Yeah, exactly. So. Well, that was what I did with the robot with the googly eye that I put on the little picture thing, the GIF. I just took and I spun the thing around.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that familiar red cooler in more and more places lately? Its frosty interior bulging with refreshing Coca-Cola? Yes, these days you can find an ice-cold Coke not only at your favorite lunchroom soda fountain and refreshment stands, but in your service station and your food store, too.
I was trying to find... unfortunately, when you brought this up, Gar, we had run out of time.
Why not ride refreshed and shop? Refresh.
The googly-eyed cat? Well, I
no.
said it after the close.
No, something else you mentioned.
Oh,
the, not the googly-eyed
Peter,
cat.
Oh. Peter Lorre.
Folks, we'd like
yes.
to present ourselves at your door.
Oh.
Dave knows.
Dressed up like one of those rich
Dave knows all.
With a suit and fresh arrangement of my old flame.
Peter Lorre and the Spike Jones Coca-Cola spotlight
old
to you.
Funny.
Look, folks, easy. No hands.
Yeah, maybe I'll leave that in there for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
yeah,
would be a good
go.
Idea. Yeah.
If we run out of time.
Because that's a great tune.
My old flame.
This is before his voice changed.
But it's funny now and then how my thoughts go flashing back again to my old flame. My old flame, my new lover's all.
Can you bring up the volume just a little, Dale?
Sure.
For I haven't met a girl so magnificent or elegant.
There you go.
As my old flame.
What a pleasant tune.
I've met so many who had fascinating ways. A fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some who took me up to the sky. But their attempts at love were only imitations of my own flame. I can't even think of a name. But I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame.
In the house fire.
Think of her name. I'll have to look through my collection of human heads. But it's funny now and then how my thoughts go flashing back again to my old flame. My old flame. My new lovers all seem so tame. They won't even let me strangle them. For I haven't met a girl so magnificent or elegant as my old flame. I've met so many who had fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. I saw this eye, so I removed the other eye. That eye that kept winking and blinking at other men. It was making me, some who took me up to the skies, for their attempts at love were only imitations of my old flame. I can't even think of her name. What was her name? Doris, Laura, Chloe, Emily, Mo, Jack. No, it couldn't have been Mo. I can't stand it, I tell you. This is driving me sane. I'm going to... She would always treat me mad. So I poured a can of gasoline and struck a match to my old flame.
Pleasantly disturbing. Pleasantly disturbing.
Well, that was Paul Frees.
Yes.
Peter Lorre comes up later. He comes up later there.
I heard more old tunes first through Spike Jonze and then later from the actual artist. And I like Spike Jonze more.
He is a lot of fun with that crazed Dixieland style.
The band members, they had to be amazing at their craft in order to go sidebar to what they were doing.
Yeah, plus if you can even get through life with a name like Ishkabibble, then you're doing all right.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, that was Kay Kaiser. That was Kay Kaiser.
Oh, that was Kay Kaiser at Ishkabibble.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had the Fred Rock and...
George Rock.
George Rock and Freddie Morgan.
And
Freddie Morgan was amazing.
A Cleveland guy, Freddie Morgan. Because they all came from Cleveland.
All roads lead.
From Cleveland, yes. From Cleveland.
From Cleveland, yes. Yeah. I always used to say, I worked out in Fairview Park, so we were near the airport. And I would always say something like, you know how there's a plane full of idiots over Cleveland Hopkins Airport? They're landing.
They're landing?
Because they're landing.
I like the guy who was from Milwaukee and painted on his rooftop "Welcome to Cleveland."
People
could see through the air, you know, coming down in the airplane.
That's pretty funny.
It might terrify some people if they did it here in Florida. They wrote "Welcome to Cleveland" on their roof.
That would be a disappointment.
Well, no, they would think that they absolutely got on the wrong plane. Like, what? Absolutely.
But to know you're landing in Cleveland, it's disappointment central.
Oh.
Trust us.
Yeah. I told you guys about the last time I went on a plane where they asked me if I wanted some help. And I thought, well, I haven't been on a plane in 30 years. I won't know the airports when I get there. And I would like some help to get from point A to point B. I had to get the person I was going to go stay with to call the airports, called them and said, is this person, you know, a balanced individual that, you know, they would be. And I'm like, wait, I'm 50 plus years old. I'm an adult. I own my own home. And you're asking some, what the heck? Yeah, but the airline, you know, was asking, is this individual suitable for air flight?
Maybe you shouldn't have been wearing your garlic get up.
Trying
to get on a plane, you know, I mean, just that might be a small issue for some. I don't know.
See, what you don't understand is the GAR outfit includes Clifford the Big Red Dog fluffy slippers. And I think that's
awesome.
Right there.
That might be,
That is.
That could have been a red flag of some sort. Yeah.
It could have been a red dog.
There
you go. But that was like crazy. I was like, what? Wait. Yeah, there it is.
Eat medicine that's out of date. Use your private parts as piranha bait.
What?
Dumb ways to die.
Dumb ways
so
to
many
die.
Dumb ways to die. Dumb ways to die. So many dumb ways to
dumb
die.
Dumb ways to die.
Is that them two girls?
Get your toast out with a fork.
Cartoons.
Do your own.
Those two girls, one of them was on Big Bang Theory as Cuthbert Polly's girlfriend. The anemic looking girl that could use a sandwich.
Not that I know of.
She was doing duets.
It's an animated thing that I'm
talking about.
I don't think
it's not stuff I would play here because it's very adult. But they're funny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the girl that played the... she was when Cuthbert Polly finally overcame his shyness and got a girlfriend. It was her. She was on for a few seasons. And then she teamed up with some other...
Micucci. Kate Micucci.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the
one. And Lundgren or something? Blonde. Paul Blonde, yeah. Yeah, man.
They're vulgar, but they're funny as hell. Yeah.
Garfield and Oates or something like that.
Yes, I think that's it.
Never heard of.
This is a very pleasant, at least it's a pleasant melody, you know?
Yeah, this is not them. Dumb ways to die.
I like it.
Dave, we'll have to give Dale the link to it to see it on YouTube.
Oh, there's a video to it. Oh, how nice.
Oh, yeah, the video's very nice and fluffy and happy.
People, well, it should be. Let's look at the topic. The topic suggests it should be happy. Dumb ways to die. This is an earworm.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Well, you warned me.
Oh, there it is, right there. Okay. Yeah.
Be safe.
Yep. Dumb ways to die.
Oh, there we go. Thanks for the link.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Well, gentlemen, I've been up for now a consecutive 21 hours. I am out of gas.
Don't shovel anything that doesn't pay. How about that?
Nope. Gonna run upstairs and say goodnight to Hoot McHoot.
All right.
The hooting hound.
Yeah, well, it was good to be back in contact with you guys. You folks take care.
It's always a blast, Gar.
All right.
With that being said,
Dave gone already?
Dave, you're still there, aren't you?
Quiet.
We lost him.
I guess.
He conked out before I did. Good night, Dave.
Good night, Dale.
Good night.
Say good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night.
Dave, we lost you.
Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
bringing you this series of classic boners in radio and television, we turn back the clock to the early pioneer days of radio, for our starting point, to what is considered the granddaddy of all fluffs. Harry Von Zell, veteran announcer, was introducing the chief executive to millions of radio listeners who awaited this important address. Let's listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Hubert Hebert.